I think you're going to enjoy this session. We have back with us this afternoon Dr. Schillach, who's a Burlington family physician, for those of you who weren't here this morning, who spends most of his time treating individuals suffering from an addiction and trauma. He also offers a six-week mindfulness program three times per year. He's a voracious learner and recently released his third album? Of original music. Yeah. And for those of you who saw him this morning, know that he's not only gorgeous, but smart. He paid me to say that. And another gorgeous but smart person is Heather. She's a member of our We Agnostics group here in Hamilton. And during the past 15 years, she studied meditation and Buddhist philosophy and psychology in an academic setting at McMaster University. She studied in retreats with teachers from a variety of traditions. She was trained as a meditation guide and as a course leader in the Tibetan Buddhist community. Please help me welcome Heather. Thank you, Heather.
All right. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
So Heather and I have a game plan. I'm going to start off. Heather has a nice juicy practice to finish with. It's a bit longer. I have a bunch of short, snappy things to try and a little bit of talking. Okay. So basically what I was saying to Heather before the mics went on is that I've managed to compress my 18-hour course down to about 20 minutes for you. So you're welcome. And I hope you really enjoy it. And you get everything out of it that you could if you did the 18-hour course. If it doesn't happen, come take the course. So the first thing that I teach in the course is a simple thing that many of you have probably heard before called square breathing. It's also known as box breathing. When we get anxious, it's natural to unconsciously make our breathing shallow or rapid, or sometimes to hold our breath. So it's a simple technique that can start to chill you out a little bit, and it's called square breathing because you breathe in a square pattern. So you inhale for the same, like a four count, hold your breath while full for a four count, exhale for a four count, hold your breath while empty for a four count. Got it? Not everyone likes the breath holding. If that's that's okay. I'll suggest alternatives otherwise or after this. And if my rhythm, because I have a certain rhythm and lung size, doesn't match yours and you find that irritating, ignore me and breathe at your own pace. Got it? Let's try it for a minute or two. Okay, so just take one deep breath in and out. And inhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. Exhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. Inhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. Exhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. Inhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. Exhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. Inhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. Exhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3. One more time. Inhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. Exhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4. And come back to the room. Good. Next. It's common also when we get tense to clench our jaw. Largely unconsciously. Sometimes you might be aware of tension, right? So let's do a little exercise. Clench your jaw on purpose for about 5, 10 seconds. Go ahead. Don't bust your teeth, but clench your jaw for about 10 seconds, 5, 10 seconds. And just notice. Now relax your jaw. Let it hang out. Even open your mouth if you're comfortable with that. And notice. Okay, come back. What do you notice? If you're like me, you may notice something in the ballpark of duh. It's handy because some of you, like me, may overthink things. The second one of loosening your jaw on purpose, the clenching was just for contrast. When I just do the practice, I go straight into the loosening. To be dignified, just close your lips. As opposed to... So let's combine those two practices. So loosen your jaw, mouth open or closed, your choice. Deep breath in and out. And then inhale. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. Exhale. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. Inhale. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. Exhale. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. Inhale. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. Exhale. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. Inhale. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. Exhale. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. And come back. So could anyone foresee using this to calm down a bit? Doesn't take long, really. Does it? Like, we just spent 5 minutes. And that was with the little bit of teaching that was required, right? So even just doing, we did 5 rounds of the breathing and then the open jaw and then open jaw in 4 rounds. You can combine them and it's often a good way to sort of calm things down. Now, one of the common misconceptions when people learn mindfulness or people start learning meditation is, I'm going to sit and do meditation or do mindfulness and my mind is going to go blank. Now, of all the techniques that I have explored so far and that I share, the slack jaw is actually the one that's most likely to make your mind go blank, for me anyway, and not for everybody, but that's a common experience. But if you're sitting in meditation or mindfulness, you'll probably notice, especially if you haven't really done it much before, that your mind goes bonkers. And it's jumping all over the place, and your thoughts are rushing in one after the other, after the other, after the other. Do not believe that that means you're failing at mindfulness, because you're not. That's an extremely common initial experience, and it's normal. And it's just designed to show you just how wild your mind actually is. So please, if you're going to try this stuff out, you've not tried it before, or even if you tried it before and maybe walked away from it, do not expect yourself to have a blank mind. Okay? I knew a person who'd meditated for 7 years on a daily basis, 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. She'd do 8-day retreats once or twice a year. Some years she did a 1-month retreat. Every month she'd do a 1-day, full day of meditation, 8 hours. And I said, hey, you know that thing where your mind sometimes goes blank when you meditate? She's like, oh yeah, I know that, yeah. How often has that happened to you? She said, twice. And she was an excellent meditator, super dedicated. I was her housemate. She'd wake up at 4:30 a.m. to meditate for an hour before going to work at 6. She was ridiculously dedicated, right? So don't feel bad if your mind goes blah, blah, blah. Okay? Next, just a bit of teaching around it, and then a few more little practices, and then Heather will knock your socks off. So part of what we learn when we study mindfulness and meditation are some things that seem a bit strange at first. Specifically, we have a body, but we're not our body. We have a mind, but we're not our mind. We have emotions, but we're not our emotions. And even, maybe, we have a spirit, but we're not necessarily even our spirit. But let's just focus on the first three. It's very easy to over-identify with our body, right? Who are you? Well, I'm this. I'm this container. I'm this meat sack, as we say sometimes in the mindfulness community and the meditation community, right? And we're encouraged to identify with it. I mean, it's obviously part of us. We recognize each other through how we look in our faces, right? But the reality is that it's entirely possible that we're not actually our body. It's simply a place we live and reside for until it wears out, right? So if you buy that, or you even are willing to contemplate that a little bit, it can actually be quite liberating, right? Because the body does change over time, as you've noticed by now, right? And eventually it starts to break down, and eventually it decays, and eventually it dies, right? So there can be a lot of distress that comes up when we over-identify with being a certain age, a certain size, a certain weight, a certain ability, when these things are constantly changing over time, right? So if we're not our bodies, but we have one, well, what are we? Well, what we would say in terms of from a meditative perspective is that we are awareness. We are the part of us that is aware of having a body, that is aware of having thoughts, that is aware of having emotions. Okay? The other advantage to that is if you over-identify with your thoughts as being who you are and your thoughts are a little bit kooky, then you're going to think, oh my God, what's my problem? As opposed to, oh look, I'm having these really strange thoughts. So it can decrease a lot of suffering if you start to practice that sort of gap of I'm over here and it's over there. Now, this shouldn't be foreign or strange to you as AA members, because what's step one again? We admitted we are powerless over alcohol. That means we're over here and it's over there, and we have it, but we are not it. Sound familiar? I'm saying the exact same thing about your body, your thoughts, and also your emotions. We have all of those things, but we are not those things. Now, they can take us over. We can forget that we are awareness. We can forget that we're not our bodies or our thoughts or our feelings, right? But if you remember that it's there, just in case, you know, you sometimes may forget step one, but then when you remember it, things get better, don't they? Right? So similarly, we're not our emotions. That we have emotions, sometimes they can be strong, they can swamp the self, but you don't need to necessarily identify with them when possible. Now, sometimes they'll be so strong, you'll be overcome. That happens, right? But if you can just find an anchoring spot where you exist and you can observe yourself, it helps a lot, right? Even just in changing your language. Wow, I notice I'm really angry right now, as opposed to I'm angry. It gives a little gap, and we'll talk about gaps in space shortly. So just in terms of a practice to ground, one other quick thing. Careful about marketing, because we get marketed all kinds of things that tell us that our bodies should be certain ways. And that usually causes suffering because most people's bodies aren't that way. But also careful about marketing of mindfulness or meditation itself, because a lot of photographs in popular media are of perfectly serene-looking, young, skinny women, some of whom are holding their arms up like this in meditation. Now, I saw a guy talk on meditation. He's a meditation scholar and a lifelong or decades-long practitioner. And he said, do you think she's meditating? Like, how long can you hold your arms up like this for? It's fake, right? So careful about the get-rich-quick version of mindfulness and meditation, because it actually, part of the reason why about 40% of people at least drop out of my mindfulness program, which has remained constant for years, no matter what I do to the curriculum, is, according to my wife, who also teaches meditation, she says, stuff comes up. You don't necessarily want to look at it, right? So it's not all like sunshine and rainbows. It can also be, you can start to become aware of stuff that's a little more unpleasant. But I mean, if you've done step four, you know what that's about, right? So, and how liberating it can be just to notice it and have it affirm that you're okay. So in terms of how you find that place from which you can observe, I have a simple little practice that I like sharing. And it has three simple parts. One of them is to occupy the space where you're actually sitting. Now, that can be very subtle and small, but basically we're taught to hold our bodies in certain ways, and we have habitual ways of holding our bodies. So, you know, Wonder Woman's pose or Superman's pose? Taking up a lot of space, right? It actually feels quite liberating so long as it doesn't make you feel unsafe to take up a little bit more space, right? Because the mind often goes the way the body already goes, right? It's partly why the slack jaw works well for emptying out the mind to some extent or slowing things down is this is a dumb face. And the mind follows. But it's also a face of awe or surprise or curiosity, right? And then the mind follows suit. So similarly, if we're scrunched in, it feels protective, but it actually creates a feedback loop of creating more anxiety because it's not safe enough for me to... So I just invite you to open up a little bit without laying on your neighbor, as happened in the front row here for fun. So that could mean moving your feet a little bit further apart, maybe your knees if you're comfortable with that, maybe pulling your abdomen a bit out of your pelvis, opening up the chest a little bit, maybe tucking the chin in so you lengthen the back of the neck so you're not like texting, driving, TV position, but a little bit chin in and lengthen the back of the neck, and just have the hands maybe not crossed if you feel comfortable with that, and just notice for a minute or for a few moments what that feels like to open up some. Good. Next, holding that position, become aware of your feet and the arches of your feet. And what I would suggest is cup them a little bit, like flex your arches a little bit just inside your shoes, just to feel like you're a little bit more connected to your awareness of the bottom of your feet and maybe a little bit more connected to the ground. So just flex them each about 5 or 10 times and then just let them rest in your open position. And notice. And finally, breathe into the center of yourself, wherever you're, however you define that place. So while maintaining an open posture, feeling some connection to the ground, just nice on your own time, nice, easy, deep inhalations and exhalations, slowly but steadily into the center of you, wherever that is. Let's just do that for a couple minutes. And now, while maintaining this awareness, so continue just breathing slowly and gently into your center, I'd invite you to try something interesting. Namely, send your attention off to your right with your ear, just listening to the right of where you're sitting. And just for a little while, search for the quietest sound that you can hear to your right. Just send your attention out there and search for the quietest sound you can hear. Now sending your attention off to the left, and in to the left, listening for the quietest sound that you can hear, that you can find. Bringing your attention back to your breath now. And one more thing I'd like to invite you to do, which is just notice as your breath goes in and then your breath goes out, that there's a little gap at the end of the breath going in before the breath starts to go out. And there's also a little gap at the end of the breath going out before the breath starts to come back in. So I want you to place your attention on those two gaps that happen in every cycle of breath. And when you notice the gap, send your attention into the gap. Let's try that for a minute or two. And then slowly and gently bringing your attention back to the room. All right, good job. So in a fairly brief period of time, about 25 minutes or so, we covered a lot of ground. We did square breathing, We did slackjaw awareness. We did a combination of those two. We did some teaching around remembering that you're actually perhaps awareness and not your body, your mind, or your emotions, but that you have all these things. We did a centered, we did an open, grounded, centered practice to try to find that seat of awareness. Then did a couple of meditations around finding or creating space by looking for the quietest sound. You can also do that in front of you and behind you, like the four directions, which you didn't have time to do. And then that last one of sending your awareness into the gap. And when you do these kinds of practices, you can stretch time. Isn't time flowing a bit differently right now? It's an answer to the question from the morning. All right. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Heather. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, friends. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Heather. I forget to say that almost every time I speak, but I have it written down here. And I have to say it's one of the most heartwarming practices of AA. I love it when people say, "Hi, Heather." It's very nice. Okay, this afternoon I'm going to do a practice that I did at a retreat that was called Finding Freedom from Our Negative Patterns. So I did that retreat about 8 years ago, I think. And this practice was presented by a Zen teacher, and it has stuck with me, and so I passed it on a few times. So we'll try it this afternoon. Dr. Sichler has got us all centered and present in the room, so that's great. In kind of standard meditation practice, we usually bring our attention to something that grounds us in the present, and often that's our breath. In contemplative practice, we usually bring it to some other thing to contemplate. So today we're going to contemplate a series of three different sentences. And when you do contemplation, you roll the thing around in your head. So you bring up ideas, sensations, memories, emotions. So you bring up all kinds of associations with the thing that you're contemplating. So as you sit and contemplate, you'll do that. You'll have some thoughts, memories, feelings, sensations. And then your mind will wander off to what you're going to have for supper, what you're going to do tomorrow, and how early you have to get up, or the drive home. And just like in any practice of meditation, when you realize that happens, then you bring your mind back to the object of meditation, which will be the sentence. And to help you with that, I'll say the sentence once or twice as we practice. The first sentence is a fill-in-the-blanks sentence. So each person is going to fill in a blank in the sentence, and in the place where that occurs, I'll just say blank, and you fill in your own. So if it were something like, the weather today is blank, some of you might fill it in with sunny, fall-like, and so on. So everybody will have their own thing that they fill in the blank. So once you've filled in your blank, you can, like I say, roll the idea around in your head and in your body and in your feelings. So the first sentence then, you can sit in a nice, comfortable position. Get comfortable with yourself, with your body, with who you are. And we'll contemplate for about 2 minutes the sentence, "I had a blank childhood." That is, I had a blank childhood. I had a blank childhood. Okay, come back to the room now. So if you feel comfortable doing this, you can turn to someone close to you and talk about how you experienced that. You might want to say what you chose, what kind of ideas came up, what kind of feelings came up. So we'll use about 2 minutes now. And for those people that feel comfortable, share with your neighbor, introduce yourself if you don't know each other, and go ahead. Yeah, two or three, it's okay. Ian, join those people. Join with you. Oh, you got... Oh. What's that?
Did you have any chance to go to that Thich Nhat Hanh retreat in St. Catharines a few years ago?
I did.
Yeah, so did I.
I bailed.
Did you? Oh, why?
At the time, I thought it was because I don't like drugs, or I just need light. But it says, you're home to drink.
Oh, did you?
I think so. At that stage, I was bailing on retreats for alcohol. You know, I would go thinking this was a reprieve, and it turned out to be too hard.
I did find myself flattened by that retreat energetically. Like, I just felt so flat.
A lot of... Whenever there's somebody really important like that, there's a lot of...
Need.
There's a lot of jittery energy and stuff, you know? And so it was pretty tight, too, about the silence. I mean, which is fine, but it could have been more gentle. I love the singing, you know?
Yeah, it was really nice. My wife still remembers some of them.
Okay, you can finish what you're saying then, and then come back. Is there anyone who has the courage to go over to the microphone and share a little bit of what you just shared with your partner? Yay, thank you.
My name's Kathy, I'm an alcoholic from Winnipeg.
Hi, Kathy.
I've been in therapy for so long, I don't mind sharing at all, what the hell. So I chose the word good. And then I ruminated about how awkward that was and about how contrary I feel about it. And in the sharing experience, if you don't mind my doing it, was Janine was totally opposite. She picked the word bad and had the very same feeling of conflict in that. So that was really interesting.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Oh, thank you.
Hi. That was weird. The word that came to mind for me right away was warm, and that's not true. It was not a warm childhood. There were some warm moments, and I think what came up in the conversation afterwards was, I think after all the meditation, I found myself in a very warm place, and therefore my mind could kind of float back to warm experiences I had had as a child, and it just spoke to me about how my feelings just color everything. They color my thoughts, they color my memories. You know, if I'm feeling bad, I'm more likely to remember bad stuff. If I'm feeling good, I'm more likely to remember good stuff. So that was interesting. I mean, it was nice. Nice.
Great. Thanks so much. Okay, so can we get ourselves comfortable again? Strong back, open heart. The next sentence that we'll contemplate is the following. I had a childhood. I had a childhood. We'll do about 2 minutes. I had a childhood. Okay, come back to the room. So you can think about the images and the feelings and so on that came up with that and share it with the people that you had shared with the last time for a minute or two. Okay, thank you. So once again, if there are a couple of brave souls that would like to get up and share how they experienced that. Thank you, Lorraine.
Hi, Lorraine Alcoholic.
Hi, Lorraine.
The first thing that came to my mind was she didn't say blank.
Yeah. That's right. We're all doing the same one.
And then my mind said, I know why. Because for myself, I had to ask, did I have a childhood? And I had visions of when I was very young. And then I skipped right into where, because I was raised by my mother, how I had to take over making meals, helping with the house. And this was all before I was 10, 11 years old. But that was the first thing. She didn't say blank.
Interesting. Thank you, Lorraine. Yeah, and I should probably have it said we're all doing the same one this time to make that clear.
Hi, Ron Alcoholic.
Hi, Ron.
Now that I thought about it the second time, because you brought up the same topic, my childhood ran on two tracks. I was a privileged child in many ways, but my father was an alcoholic, And the darkness was starting to creep in, even very young, although I didn't see it. And by the time I hit adolescence, darkness had taken over. So I had a childhood, but it was short.
Thank you very much. Okay, so for our last sentence, it's the same one for all of us as the last one was. So let's close our eyes, and probably we'll just spend about a minute contemplating the last sentence. There was a childhood. There was a childhood. Okay, and this time we'll come back to the room, but rather than having the small group or the pair discussion, maybe we'll just have a couple of people talk about the whole series and how they experienced the whole series of things. Thank you so much. One other person? Is there anyone who would like to?
Sure.
Oh, here we got some.
Dave Alcoholic.
Thank you, Dave.
I like what we just did. Sorry, I'm not going to say this very well, but I think what this is about for me is I don't have to label my experiences, right? I don't have to say they're good or bad anymore. Like, I had a very distressing childhood, so when we do the first one, distressing is the word, right? But I don't have to judge everything that happens to me as good or bad, right? I just have to accept that it's happening, right? And when we get to the end is, you know, I have this narrative that I have a sad life because I had a sad childhood. I don't need to live in that narrative for my whole life because there was a childhood, right? And, you know, I'm not in that anymore.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's kind of the way I experienced this too. And so that's what I carried forward after that time, that anytime I judge something this or that, I could take out the adjective and see how it feels. I could say, I have a shitty boss, take out shitty and say, I have a boss. Or, I had a great day. I had a day. So for me, whether I label it as something that seems positive or something negative, it tightens the experience. And if I take out the adjective, it broadens it for me. And that's how it worked for me, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you. So that's the end of this session. And now I'm going to talk to you.